Okay, I think we will go ahead and get started. How long do we have?
45 minutes.
Okay, all right. For those of you that just came in, I am Pat Peters. Preach out in Clinton, which is really the capital of Oklahoma. Other people don't know that, but... The last session we talked about ministering to people who are in grief, and my main encouragement in that session was to encourage local congregations to do a grief support group. In the packet that you have on the left-hand side is my encouragement in that direction and the materials that we actually use in conducting our grief support group. If you look at that and you have questions about it, give me a call or text me or something, and we'll communicate. But I'm highly encouraging this because it is such a useful tool for a local congregation to do. It gets us into the heart of the community in exactly the way that we want to get in. We'd like to go out and just set up Bible studies with people. Truth is, people don't want us to come up and just set up a Bible study, but people do want us to show our love for them, and this is a good way to do it. Let me also just say one thing that is totally off topic, but just an interesting, wonderful event took place today, and that is that I met up with Steve Price. Steve and I were both baptized in the Sea of Marmara in the country of Turkey when we were stationed there a few years ago. And it has been 48 and a half years since, 40, right around there, since I got to see Steve. And he is an elder now, and I've been preaching a long time, and that congregation has been an integral part of all of our lives, and just an amazing experience. So just a highlight to see you again, brother. First piece of paper you have there is Why Crisis Opens a Door. I won't read through all of this, but let me tell you what happens. We want to have an open discussion with the communities that we're in. We would like to be able to go out and have a Bible study with everybody. That's harder than it's ever been, I think. There are some real obstacles that stand in the way sometimes of us getting into people's lives. But when a tragedy occurs, we have not only the opportunity, I think we have the obligation to demonstrate the love of Christ to everybody around. And the people that are involved in that tragedy at that time, when they see the love of God shining through us, then we have opened up opportunities for wonderful things to happen. At the very least, it will enhance the reputation of the church in the area. And truthfully, church, we need that in a lot of places. And so we need to have an open discussion about how we can actually respond to people who have been involved in a tragedy. Now, in this, I try to cover the topic in that I've given you there. But on the purple piece of paper, next, let's just go to that and let's talk through this. There's a wide variety of what we might call tragedies. We, obviously, it is a tragedy in an individual family's life when they lose a loved one. That's a very narrow definition. Usually when we're talking about tragedies, it's of a bigger range than that. All people, for the person who loses a loved one, that is 100% devastating tragedy. Okay? And so we give them that respect. We pay attention to their pain. We do what we can in the name of the compassion of Christ to minister to them. And that's really what we were talking about in the last session. But we also live in a part of the world that it's a reality that our houses may blow away. We live in a very interesting part of the world that we can have earthquakes and tornadoes going on at the same time. And so we are exposed to sometimes very wide-ranging tragedies of different kinds. And then in other parts of the country, other parts of the world, we see hurricanes go on. How should the church respond in those cases? We also live in for as far as natural disasters, it may be, we don't have many blizzards, but we do have ice storms. A few years ago, we were lucky in Clinton. We only went 3 days without power. Other places went weeks without power. What if the church steps in at those moments and says, we're here for you? It's important. And then there are fires. Somebody may lose their home, or there may be an apartment complex fire. Was it a year ago that we had devastating fires in, was it 2 years ago? We had devastating fires in Northwest Oklahoma, to which our congregation responded by, at that time, we were contributing money and water, immediate supplies for the workers that were going up. And these fires were devastating fires, covered hundreds of thousands of acres. There are places that have earthquakes. There are other mass casualty events. Unfortunately, we live in a world where there are shootings. How should you respond if there is a mass casualty event in your area? And then there are other more local tragedies, perhaps more common. You'll hear about something that will happen in a school system occasionally. Death of a student, death of a teacher. And you may hear on the news, counselors have been called in and will be available for the students. Well, I want to tell you, we have been asked to respond to school tragedies like this. We have 3 elementary schools, a middle school, and a high school in Clinton. We have gone to each of those schools on various occasions, and most of them several times over the years. We've also been to Weatherford and Butler and Burns Flat and Cordell, because tragedies occur everywhere, and they need somebody to come in. There is a type of training that you can go through, and I'm going to finish talking about that today, that will help you in those times. But I'm going to give you a list of questions that you can ask at those moments that will help with the tragedies. The point is that we, as a compassionate body of Christ, need to be ready to respond when things happen. Now, the truth is that on, like, tornadoes, how do you get ready for that? Well, the truth is you can't. The biggest thing that you have to do as a local congregation is to decide ahead of time that when something happens, you're going to do something, because there's too many variables. At one point, we decided we were going to put together a plan so that whenever a tornado blew away some community around, that we'd be ready to go. And as the more we talked about it, the more we realized there isn't any way to prepare, because there's too many variables in that loss. But if you decide that whatever is going to happen, you will respond, that's a big step. When Hurricane Mitch, a number of years ago, hit Honduras, sat on top of Tegucigalpa for a couple of days, did massive damage. The church had a school there at that time. And the daughter of the people that ran that school happened to be a part of our congregation. They made a direct plea for clothing I'll say more about clothing in a minute, but they made a plea for clothing. On a Sunday night, we decided that we would respond to that. A week from the next day, we sent off 11,000 pounds of clothing, clean, well-kept, folded clothing, put in boxes according to gender and size, and labeled in Spanish and English. Got it done in a week. Now, it was mostly the church, but not just the church, because when the community heard about it, they knew that we were going to do something. And some of the community came in and worked with us. It was wonderful. It was just wonderful for that to happen. The point is, make the decision that you're going to respond. And as I said, there's lots of opportunities for this. So here's the rules for responding. Once you've made the decision, you're going to do it. First of all, do no harm. Don't get in the way. You're going to minister to people according to the immediate need that you see. And that's going to vary as to what's happening. Second rule, I think you might have heard this one before. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Look in those people's lives at that moment, and what do they need? Third one, work with the authorities and the professionals. There's going to be other people coming in. FEMA may be coming in. There may be other government agencies. There may be a lot of different other organizations. Don't be a hindrance to anybody. Now, I will stick this in, and number four is the most controversial of these things, and you may disagree with me terribly. My personal recommendation, avoid the Red Cross. We have had some very bad experiences with Red Cross, and I'm not going to spend time ragging on them, but when the tornado blew away about a third of the town of Cordell, the church in Cordell was responsible for feeding, I think they were feeding 700 people a day for 3 weeks, something like that. Congregations from all over the area responded. It was one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen the church do anywhere, because it was a cooperative effort, everybody working together. Red Cross came in and tried to take over and take all the money that was being sent to those people. And in a public meeting, the Red Cross said, only about 10% of this will stay in Cordell. We're going to send the rest to other places. A little bit of a bitter taste there, if you might have tasted that in my. Avoid the Red Cross. The Lord's church needs to be doing this work, and we need to be the ones exerting the effort. I encourage you to meet real needs, not just what you guess are going to be needed. Except in rare occasions, there is no need to gather clothing. If a tornado blows away a part of a town, how far do they have to go to get clothing? Probably 2 blocks, okay? There's clothing available, and nobody wants your old used underwear. We have seen when the May 3rd tornado hit Oklahoma City, it was unbelievable how much clothing was gathered. And hardly anybody came to get clothing. And that was a huge, widespread, devastating tornado. When the tornado hit Cordell, they ended up sending 2 semi-trailer truckloads of clothing to an Indian reservation in Arizona because people just kept bringing clothing, and it became a headache. People don't need clothing in the case of a tornado. Now, in the case of Honduras, that was altogether different because they didn't have access to any clothing, and they were very poor to begin with. And so meet real needs. In the case of tornadoes, the immediate needs are going to be water and gloves and flashlights and batteries and blankets. And then very soon after that, you're going to need to provide food for the victims and for the workers that are going in. And when we respond that way, the night of the tornado in Cordell, we got on the phone and called the radio stations in the area and said, these are the things we need, bring them to the Church of Christ in Clinton. They were also carrying messages because they were covering Western Oklahoma, and they said, if you are in Hinton, go to the Church of Christ in Hinton. And if you're in Elk City, go to the Church of Christ in Elk City. I was so proud of the church because everybody was responding. And we took care of a lot of people for a long time. The church there did an outstanding job at that. Turn your building into a place of refuge and help. Give up normality. And what if you don't get to meet in regular ways for the next few weeks? Well, isn't that too bad? I will tell you, I know of a congregation that was ready to respond, and they were doing wonderful things, and some of their members got upset because on Sunday morning the relief workers wouldn't go home and get into their church clothes and come back and attend worship properly because they were too busy feeding people. This is why we need to give good, solid compassion to people and not that sort of thing. But if your building turns into a wreck for the next few weeks, so be it. So be it. I've got a file in my desk, what to do if a tornado hits Clinton. Now, this is assuming that our building is still standing. But if it's still standing, we have a list of things to do. And it includes getting a, if we don't have power, getting a big generator to get the building up so that we can act as a relief source. But all sorts of other things that are involved. Think through these things ahead of time and make your list, okay? If there's any questions about that, talk to me. But the most important thing is that we have people ready to welcome victims and to give them assurance and peace and quiet and comfort and help them to know that they're surrounded by people that love them. Now, on the next sheet, the dark blue, whatever that is, when the storm hits, that's kind of a list of what we are going to do at Clinton when this happens. If you all are not familiar with the Churches of Christ Disaster Relief Group, outstanding work. It is unbelievable how much stuff they give away. And they open doors in these communities like nothing else. They bring out hundreds of boxes, if necessary, of food items. One box will feed a family of four for 5 days. And they are very good at what they do. And they will send out a couple of those trucks immediately, followed up soon after with a truckload of mattresses and box springs, followed up shortly after with a truckload of refrigerators and stoves. And it's all just to give away. And we give it away to people. And the communities are amazed. How can you guys do this? Well, because we're just trying to love you. Okay. And so there are really good resources available for us. But those things. Now, I wanted to get to this because I want us to spend some time on this. This is the most important piece of paper you have in your packet, okay? This is a line of questioning that you can do to help people through times of crisis. This list of questions came from a training that I got to go through, and now we have two other ministers in Clinton. They've both been through this. It's called Critical Incident Stress Management. And if you have access to a Critical Incident Stress Management workshop, go to it and learn about this because it really helps you understand what you can do. We learned about this shortly after the Murrah building bombing. And this is the kind of questions, this was the debriefing, these were the debriefing questions that were asked to the rescue workers as they came out. These questions I have used, we had a couple experience a home invasion in Clinton, older couple. They got roughed up a little bit, but not seriously. They were mostly mad, but this guy broke into their house and stole her purse and stole a few other things, and they eventually caught the guy in California, I think. But I've used it there. I've used this in the schools all the way around. In cases where you get called to the hospital. This is something a lot of us experience. You get called to the hospital and somebody has either just received bad news, or maybe you get called to the emergency room and there is a terrible tragedy going on there. A few years ago, I got a phone call, and it was the hospital calling, and I could hear a woman screaming in the background, and a 5-year-old boy in Clinton had been playing with some friends, and he'd tried to climb up on a homemade barbecue, and it fell back on him and crushed his skull. And it was the mother I was hearing scream. Horrible situation. Took me days to get over that. Went home smelling like blood. But later we got to talk with them using these questions. In a week and a half after that happened, that mother attended worship with us. This will help you deal with people's tragedies at the right time. And mostly what you have to do is just ask the questions and then let them talk. So let's work through this. Question number one, what happened? You may know, but you're not the important one here. They are. Ask them what happened and have them give you the details. If it was an accident they were in, have them talk all the way through it. If you've been in a serious accident, you may remember that accident a millisecond at a time, and you need to talk through that. Okay? Ask them what happened and have them tell you in their own words what went on. This is simply people telling their story. And have you noticed? Everybody has a story. And in times of tragedy, we all need to tell it. In tornadoes, some of us were talking out here a little while ago. Everybody has a story. Where were you? What did you see? What went on? In any kind of event like that, people need to talk. So we start with what happened and we tell them. And then you ask, how did you learn about all these things? And what that does is it lets them tell you where they were. Did somebody call them and tell them what was going on? Did they hear about it on the radio? Whatever happened, it just extends their conversation further so that they tell you more details. Question number three, how did you react? Well, at this point, now notice what we're doing here. We're taking this conversation from up here, and we're going to go down into a pretty deep valley. And then we're going to come back out again. But what we're doing is we're getting deeper into it. And when we ask, how did you react, we start getting on the edge of emotions here. And they may have been scared. They may have been angry. They may have, whatever was going on, let them tell you about it. Now, folks, in all of these things, it's not time for us to talk. We don't share our story. You may have been through something catastrophic that's like it. That's irrelevant right now. All that matters is what they experienced. And so we're probing into their experience. One of the great mistakes that people make when we're talking to other people about hardship in their life is to compare ours with theirs. Don't do that. Don't do that. We need to give them the credibility at that moment of being the most important thing around, and it isn't a competition. And so we let them talk. How did you react? Well, I was crying. I was screaming, and then I was afraid, and they start sharing what was really going on, not just on the outside, but what was going on the inside. And then here's the biggest question. We're at the bottom of the valley here. What was the worst part of this event for you? And let them talk. In some cases, this is very painful. Because when you ask that question, you are giving them permission to say the unthinkable. When the rescue workers were coming out of the Murrah building, before they were allowed to leave the grounds, if those of you that were around this area at that time, you might remember the whole area was cordoned off with a fence. And before they were allowed outside the fence, they had a tent set up where they went through this debriefing. And when they got to that question, what was the worst part of that? Horrible stories. Things that they would never have talked about to anybody else. They talked about finding the children or finding people smashed between layers of the building. Horrible things that are going to stick in their minds forever. But you have asked them, what was the worst part? They want to talk about it. You've just given them permission to talk about it. Follow-up question on that, how did that make you feel? And at this point, they may be crying because they were broken. They were so devastated by what they saw, they may not have known how to react. But how did this make you feel? Angry? Afraid? Again? Maybe just completely devastated. Or, I was missing my own kids. Or, I needed somebody to hug. But they get down to the very depth of their soul at this point, and you've given them permission. And when they share that with you, you have a bond that is stronger than almost anything you can ever do with anybody. You have shared the worst moment of their life, and they've told you about it, and you've listened. Question number 6, following this up, we're coming out of the valley. What do you want to do? Well, they poured out their hearts. At this point, they may have been crying. What do you want to do? Well, I want to go home and hug my kids. Or, I want to get some rest and get back in there. Or, I want to run away. Whatever it is, there's not any right or wrong answers here. But it's making them formulate a plan as to how they move on from this horrible moment that they've just experienced. And you allow them to move. And then question number 7 really brings it into, okay, what are you going to do the rest of today? Because it makes them then think through this, rather than just walking away, being dumbfounded, being numb. Okay, what am I going to do? I need to go home. I need to rest. I need to just be quiet for a while. But this is a very real, right now, fair question, and it's helping them formulate this. What are you going to do for the next few days? Well, I've got to get back to work. I've got to go do whatever. By the way, I've done this a couple of times with highway patrolmen. when they come through an especially terrible event, or firemen, or medical people, doctors, nurses. We had another tragedy where a kid was had gone to work with his grandpa and was crushed by boxes falling over. And it got to the medical people. Couldn't hardly stand it. They needed to talk. You think, oh, they're hardened to this. No, they're not. They're people. They needed to talk. So what are you going to do for the next few days? Well, they fully formulate their plan. And then, what have you learned from this? Now, please don't be in a hurry going through this. Let them talk, as long as it takes. But let them talk. And when you get to that, what have you learned from this? They're going to start to formulate this and say, okay, I have learned something. I'm not sure where it's going to take me yet. But I'm coming out of this with something that I did not go into it with. You've taken people down in the valley and you've brought them back out. I cannot express to you how successful that chain of questions is. It really, really works. And you can use it under all sorts of circumstances. In all these things, the whole idea is that we are the body of Christ. And as the body of Christ, we are to be like Jesus. And if we're going to be like him, then we're going to be ministering to people who are broken, because that's why he came. And we're all broken. At one point or another, everybody goes through something that we need somebody to show us the love of God. We don't need cliches. We don't need happy little sing-song things. We don't need to be singing to a heavy heart. We need real compassion. And this is the honor that we have as disciples, to be the givers of Christ-like compassion to people when they most need it. I promise it works, folks. And you will be seen in a completely new way in your community, whether it's a great big town or whether it's a little bitty hamlet, whatever. When you demonstrate the love of God, people respond to that. And what an honor, what a privilege that is for us. So we need to work on it, learn to do it right. Any questions or comments, anything?
Take someone who's 10 years removed from a tragic event like 9/11. And as they tell you the story, the facts and everything has changed from their initial telling of it because of the way people process that. And this is so fascinating to me because it seems to me it helps them begin to make sense of their experience. And I just wonder if you were to sit down with someone 5-10 years after an event and ask them the same set of questions.
Be interesting, wouldn't it?
How much helping them begin to come to grasp with it and ordering that, how much more settled that would be. Because there's a piece to having it settled, settled way of seeing it, I guess.
Without knowing a lot of details on that, I can tell you that the statistics that go with this, in the case of the Murrah bombing and tragedies like that, the immediate response, if people will go through this, if the rescue workers will go through this debriefing, it reduces the need for long-term psychological help very significantly, like 60%. If you don't do something like this, it's going to come out later. This is where a lot of the PTSD sort of stuff comes along. And we could actually defuse a lot of that if we'd have done it sooner rather than later. But I think with the flash memories too, I think our memories change. This is why we really have to be careful, because we may be absolutely certain of something now that 10 years ago we would have told a different story. And it's not really a point for us as helpers to debate them as to what's what. But they may have processed something differently. It could be that what they saw at that moment, they were not ready to talk about. And they may need some time to process that. But that's a great question. I don't know where that would go. I do know it's never too late to go through this, but the sooner the better. Anything else? Yes, sir.
What was the name of the certifying agency?
Critical Incident Stress Management.
Where is that usually offered through?
It was offered in Oklahoma City just recently, last year, through, it was a government agency that offered it. I think you can probably Google it and find out where workshops will be. It would be helpful for congregations to have at least somebody in the congregation go through this. We feel very equipped right now in Clinton because all three of us have been through this. As it turns out, our youth minister really doesn't want to do this. This is not his thing, and that's okay. But our other minister probably is better at this than I am, and Ryan is extraordinary, amazing. And he and his wife both went through this training.
And it was critical incident stress management?
Yes, yes.
Any advice on the difference between working with this, say, with children as opposed to adults?
Yeah. In the case of children, there's age levels, and we could go into a lot of detail here. Kids that are 7 and younger are going to react more like children. Don't expect them to grieve like adults. They may go out and play. You tell them that somebody died, and they'll say, okay, and they go out and play for a while, and then they may come in and ask a question, and then they'll go out and play some more. And you almost get the feeling like, oh, they're not getting it. Yeah, they are. But they're processing it like a child. A kid that is 9 years old and up processes more like an adult. And so we have the opportunity there to actually go through some of this with them. Grade school age and younger, in almost any of these, I would encourage them to draw pictures. It's a great therapy. There's some other ways to deal with that. Now, I said 7 and down and 9 and up, 8-year-olds. Are altogether different. They are a class of themselves, because evidently at that age group, and there's obviously a little bit of variation there, but at that age group, they are beginning to understand that death is permanent. And they haven't quite got there yet, but they're beginning to see that a little bit more. And so you need to spend more time with an 8-year-old. We got called into Clinton Schools last week because an 8-year-old found his grandpa's gun and accidentally shot himself and is dead. And counselors from other schools and from our mental health organization, Red Rock, we all got together. And this was a common understanding among counselors. 8-year-olds are different than everybody else. So we actually had some counselors go into the classroom, the particular classroom of this child, and spend some time with them and talk through it and such. But children are still people, but they, some of them less than others, but they process, younger ones process differently than adults. So be aware of that. But there's some wonderful counseling help that is available for that too. I don't know what the 8-year-old thing is called. I'm sure that it has a name. I've always called it the 8-year death syndrome because it is so different in how they handle grief. But I've heard it called some other things too. But anyway, for whatever that's worth. You were going to say something.
If we, obviously you told us what to do in the face of a tragedy, let's just say a tornado, we call the radio stations, we let people know, but is there a way, anything that you would recommend us doing in the meantime to let emergency, like first responders, hospitals, schools, places know that we are open and willing?
Yeah, I hope I put it on there. If I didn't, one of the things on our list to do is to contact law enforcement and the hospital and I had somebody else on the list.
I guess and, that meant like, okay, there's a tornado, now we start contacting on people.
Well,
is this something we do ahead of time?
No. Okay. These are things to let these other organizations know our building is up and available.
Okay, so letting them know ahead of time, hey, we're willing to use this.
There is a value in that too. Probably for every county, I don't know how other states do it, but in Oklahoma, there's probably an emergency management something. And it's a good idea to let that person know that it is your intention that your building would be used. And again, there's so many variables. How it would be used is a different question. I know that in the case of the file on my desk, I've already gone through and said, okay, this room is going to be for flashlights and batteries and those blankets and emergency things. This room is going to be for diapers and paper goods, and we just divide the building up, and we've got signs ready to stick up and ready to go. I don't think anybody else on my staff knows I have that file. Probably be a good idea in case I'm blown away. But there is some thinking ahead of time. Mostly it's just saying, whatever happens, we're going to respond. But letting people know that you're there is helpful. Anything else? Thank you all so much for coming in here. I honestly didn't know if I was going to have anybody in here. This is late in the afternoon on Saturday, and you're all awake? It's amazing. I appreciate it so much. Thank you for being here. I think we're done.
From Shawnee, Oklahoma.
From Shawnee,
yes.
Okay.
I'm Johnny Fredman's daughter, if you know him.
Okay, all right.
I have a question about these pamphlets.
Yes.
Where could we get those?
Okay, on one of your pieces of paper, there's an address for Stephen Ministries.
Or there's Ministries?
I think so. It may be a website I put down.
Like back in the...
It probably is the last piece of paper on that... Yeah, that section. Stephen Ministry Materials. There's a website.
And it's these booklets?
Yes.
Okay.
I'll tell you what we have done in our congregation. Just this last Sunday, I went in to our elders in an elders meeting, and I said, I want to start doing this. And I said, I'm going to ask in next year's budget for $300. It costs $10 for a set. It starts at that. Actually, if you'd order enough, they get cheaper. But I said, I'm going to ask for $300 for next year. I have no idea how many we're going to send out. I said, but for the rest of this year, I'd like to have $150 right now. One of my elders, right after that meeting, came in and gave me $200 and said, take care of this. And so we've ordered 19 of those and two more of these. And so we'll start seeing that. But when you get these, they come with envelopes. And there's also a guide that comes with them that tells you how to use them and such. But they're excellent, excellent books.
Thank you so much.
Stephen Ministries, in your packet, the very last sheet of our first session today, there's a website.
I was somewhere else in the first
session. All right.
So
yeah.
Really appreciate what you put together here.
Thank you.
It's something that we really need to handle a lot better than we do.
Well, I think we can do it. It's not beyond us to do this. We don't have to call in professionals or anything. We have people that care enough. We can make this happen.
Good to see you, brother.
Thank you guys for being here.
Yes.